when we're younger, learn to turn off the feelings. We get into a situation and it's uncomfortable and we learn to just shut those feelings down.
What do we got here, man? We got springtime, okay? It's beautiful outside, beautiful sun, blue skies, green plants, fresh starts, and new discoveries. I'm Ethan. I'm the host of The Nonchalant Perfectionist. I am also a part of the Podcast Connection Network, just like this show that you're about to sink your teeth into. You know, you can check all of us out, see what we're about. We got tons of great podcasts around here. The link, well, you know, the link will be in the episode's description, and I will see you soon.
Okay, amazing humans, welcome back to another episode of Connection Over Perfection, where we season our dialogue with depth and garnish our thoughts with understanding. Today's episode is set to be a heartwarming blend of strategy and emotion. As I have the pleasure of introducing a remarkable guest, Kim Horty, Kim's journey is a testament to the transformative power of asking how before the why. A sensory perception and emotion management strategist, Kim intertwines her keen emotional awareness with a rich background in accounting and systems implementation. This unique combination has culminated in her latest literacy creation, Yucky Yummy Savory Sweet, a title that promises to be as intriguing as it is enlightening. And it is through her personal testaments that Kim discovered a profound truth. Feelings are not facts. They are instead a nuanced guesses of our brains mixed with flavors of our past. From this revelation, she crafted a method for refining our emotional experiences and savoring them as one would a meal at a fine dining establishment, rather than just indulging in the fast food of outdated emotional habits. Kim is also the author of The Perfect Heart, Creating and Maintaining Love-Life Balance, and applies her innovative approach to coaching and consulting, helping others to recalibrate their emotional palates. Kim and I share more than just a passion for understanding the heart's complexities. We are practically neighbors here in Northern California. During our conversations, we found so much in common that it was as if we were old friends catching up over coffee. It's a connection that transcends the digital space, and I eagerly anticipate the day we can convert our virtual hugs into real ones. As for Yucky Yummy Savory Sweet, my anticipation to savor each page is growing daily. It's currently en route to my doorstep as we speak, and I can hardly wait to dive in. And for those listening, you can get a taste of Kim's insights. Just visit her website at kimcorti.com. to sign up with your email and receive a free sample of her book, like I did. Kim, it is a joy to have you here with us. Welcome to the show.
My great pleasure. How are you today?
I am great after our three deep breaths that we took.
Yes, because life isn't perfect, right?
Right, because life keeps lifing around us. And so we need to recenter.
Yes, but I do have to just totally concur. Our connection is funny in that we're so close, but it's just an amazing personality connection. It's like a lost sister. I'm so happy to find you.
Yes, I feel the exact same way. So Kim, your life has been a journey with many flavors. Could you share with us some pivotal moments that led you to become the emotional chef that you are?
I'm happy to. I know everybody has their own journey. But mine started as a young girl, having, let me just say, interactions with older males that should not have happened. And then, and they were even, you know, people close by. And then I was also the product of alcoholic family. My mom was an alcoholic. She actually died from it. And that was huge. But I had spent the majority of my life with an obvious alcoholic and had a hard time facing it. And so that was one of my key things. Like, I was enlightened when I went into therapy around what happened to me and the alcoholism. Like, wow, like I've been blind, but my blindness didn't stop. I continued on with my life. I was at a very low, low, low point after my mom died and some other very, very emotionally impactful things. I was literally devastated. I mean, I've never come close to wanting to end my own life like I did at this time. And I met what, you know, I thought was the man of my dreams who was going to help me through it all and whisk me away. And he really did help me. He gave me the love that I thought I was looking for. And it turned out that he wasn't the love of my life. He cheated on me and with a friend. I mean, if I told you all that story, she worked for us. We were all very close. I would feed her dinner every Monday night after the office closed late. And here she was sleeping with my husband. But I literally was laying on the floor of my condo because I was packing up and moving from San Diego to San Francisco to get out of town and also to work. I found some work because we had two businesses together. So I literally lost everything. And I said, I got to keep this from happening to me again. I just can't do this. It's like it was just too much. And that started my journey. That led to the first book, which was about creating more balance, being more observational about the balance of my time in relationships, because I realized how out of balance we were. And I use a Venn diagram to give me a visual. You know, in the book, I shared this visual with people, but then it wasn't really satisfactory. So I kept on this journey. We're talking about getting started in 2004, 2008. I redid the book. And then I read a book called How Emotions Are Made, The Secret Life of the Brain. And it just blew my mind. This book was what really transformed how I viewed emotions. And that is that they are a prediction of the brain. But so is everything else. Looking at you is a prediction of the brain. You know, everything I see, everything I hear, everything I smell, everything I touch is a prediction of the brain. And the brain can get it wrong. It's called prediction error. And the only way that we can fix it is by helping it. And just to give you a simple example of a prediction error, you're out and about in town and you see your friend Steve and you go up to Steve and you, oh, Steve, and you realize, wait, you're not Steve. The brain predicted wrong. And it wasn't until it got more detail that it predicted correctly. But imagine if you didn't have the benefit of, you know, seeing Steve and knowing it was him. What if Steve was with your quote unquote Steve was with another woman and you're thinking Steve is cheating on his wife because you saw Steve with that woman and it wasn't right. And so there's so many instances where this can happen in our life. And that's why I've created this book to kind of give us some tools to understand that our feelings, as real as they seem, might not be correct, and to give us incentive to try and investigate the ingredients of our emotions, which are our perceptive inputs. It's those things that we get from the outside world, and also teaching people about the inputs we get from our inside world, which is called interoception. So you think of it interior. And the funny thing about interoception is that if you type it in your computer, it's going to spell check it to interception. And so I like to say to people, think of it as catching your feelings inside of your body. And that way, you know, you are more connected to those feelings and you're able to label them better and be able to distinguish them better. And that's really what it's about, is being able to distinguish our feelings and also add more complexity, so that it's not like a simple ingredient like we might have with noticing Bob versus being able to distinguish between Bob and the stranger.
I love how you explain the perceptions as ingredients. And that kind of sparked a question. I read a little bit of the beginning of the book that you send as a freebie when you purchase the book, or when you sign up with the email, I think, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But could you give a little bit more of how the concept of cooking and emotions and how you've brought that together? So could you just give us a little insight about that?
I would love to. So what is ingredients used in? A recipe, right? So where do we get our recipes? It's our past experiences. And so it's within our body that provides all of the tools to create the recipe and to deliver it. So just a real simple explanation would be like the show Chopped. Have you ever seen Chopped on the Food Network channel?
I think so.
So imagine that your brain is given a box of surprise ingredients and it has to do something with this. Now, just so you know, it's getting 11 million bits of information, and we are every second, and we get about 124 bits of it consciously. So there's a lot going on in that brain. So it's got this repeatable process. So it gets all this information and it has to do something with it. And it's constantly, either adjusting our temperature or giving us what we're going to see or telling us what we hear. It's constantly doing this. And so with it, what it produces because of our experience. So I know what red is because I learned a long time ago what red is. And I've seen red so many times and some of the nuanced colors of red that I don't have to think about it. And so that comes true too with what we learn as far as how we label our emotions. So if we're in a circumstance where we get so much information and we decide like that is fear or that's happiness or this is love, like we have recipes for all of these things in our brains that we learned. Now, I understand there's some automatic things like we feel love always in the same place in our heart. We feel anger, we'll feel it in our stomach. Like we'll feel these emotions, but what creates those feelings most of the time is up to us. And so these recipes get delivered to our body only when we need to know about it. Our heart beats all the time, our stomach gurgles all of the time, but we don't notice it until the brain makes us aware of it. And this is when the servers, I like to call them, it's called peptides that the body produces. A lot of people have heard of peptides, but the Candace Pert, Dr. Candace Pert calls them molecules of emotion. And so when the brain has a response and delivers them to the body, this is when we're aware of them. So if we think about these ingredients, the brain, just like the chefs on Chopped, have to use their experience with these ingredients, which could be cultural, it could be what they learned from other chefs or what their mom made. And that's what they use, even though they all have access to all of the same ingredients, all of the same contents of the basket. They each come up with something unique. And I'd like everyone to realize your emotional responses are as unique as all of the chefs that produce whatever they produce with the exact same ingredients.
I love that. And I love how you're taking something so complex and breaking it down into something that is really digestible. Right?
Exactly,
Pun
exactly.
intended, pun intended.
Well, I think you will agree that so many people are afraid of their feelings. I was
Oh,
afraid.
yeah.
And I wanted to remove the stigma. And in the predictive nature of our brain, we seem to always predict worse outcomes. Like, oh, this is going to be either we think it's going to be super awesome or really, really bad. Rarely do we have. Not saying it's not impossible, but most of the time we think, oh, this is going to be the best trip yet, or this is going to be the worst thing ever. And rarely is that prediction correct. People with anxiety, they have shown, like if you track the things that you're anxious about, maybe 7 or 8% of them come about are true. So this is why I say you can't believe your feelings. You can't believe all of your thoughts. And so trying to develop curiosity and use that to kill your fear is really the way to help you get more comfortable because knowing that your brain could get it wrong not only gives you some grace around having wrong information, having these feelings that might be wrong, but it also gives you the ability to explore to say, oh, maybe I didn't have it correct, or maybe there's more about this person that I don't like. That if I just learned a little bit more, it might give me a different viewpoint. I dare to argue if there's really truth out there. There's just too much in the way of unique individual recipes to really know that truth really exists. And so it's only when we add more information to our recipes, when we add more distinction and are able to tell the difference of our emotions and give yourself that ability to dive into them just a little bit more. And I'm not talking like a huge deep dive, but just understanding what has to happen for you to feel a certain way. Or do I really need to feel this way? Can I add more ingredients that might soften the flavor? Just like if something's too spicy, what do? You add sugar. So it's all about creating the experiences that you want.
I love that. And something that you touched on that I want to circle back to is I was interviewing another podcaster and he was talking about the perception of truth and how it's like looking at a puddle. The puddle is there, but every angle and each person, where they're standing, you know, how, what lens they're looking through, how their day was, is going to see a different angle of the puddle or what the reflection. And so I think that that is very humbling to remember. And what you're saying is that in every situation, each person, like you said, they have their own ingredients that they're adding into the recipe that we're working on, right?
Exactly. And that's why you have different accounts at the scene of a crime or the scene of an accident, because perceptively we focus on different things. And that's one of the key things in my book, is about managing your focus. So anytime that you're in a state of fear or you're in a state of stress and you've got that cortisol is designed to keep us safe, but it also is like putting blinders on. You're kind of going like this because you're just so focused here. Whereas when you release the cortisol and you are in a more coherent state, you know, your body is flowing, not in a state of stress, and the blood is flowing to the brain and to the muscles. It's a different focus. We're digesting our food. So that opens up the lens. So it's about saying, okay, yes, you need to focus sometimes like this, but too often we're like this and not opening up that lens. And that has a lot to do with managing fear, because people forget fear can be imagined. And I have a story about that in my book, if I could share, because this is really honestly,
yes, of course,
one of my favorite stories to tell. And I think I try and tell it as often as possible, because it's an old Buddhist story about a Buddhist monk walking on a path. It's, you know, twilight or whatever. It's, you know, it's going to get late. So he's trying to get home before it gets dark to his village, and it's a country path. And all of a sudden he spots something long and curled, kind of coiled on the path. And he's like, snake. So he stops in his tracks and he's thinking, it's probably poisonous. And there's all kinds of danger now for me. How am I going to get home? And he starts rattling through all these things that in his state of fear, because he's just super fearful, like, what's going to happen to me with this snake? So he finally gets himself together. He gets curious and he puts something like to make a torch. I don't know what he had with him. I'm just going to make up that he had whatever it took. And he comes closer and he sees it's a rope. So someone must have traveled that path and lost a small piece of rope, and it just happened to be coiled like a snake. And so he could go by without fear. And now he's able to go down. So a few things happen in this story. He now, because he never, let me just say it this way, because he never expected a piece of rope and the shape was like a snake, he said snake. His brain told him snake. And his fear state could have, if he hadn't gotten curious, his fear state could have brought him back to go back down the path and get home late, go back to the village, tell all the villagers there's snakes on this trail. And so all these other people would have traveled that path in fear, looking for a snake. But because he saw that rope, he knows now there's a possibility of other things on that path. But that one mistake could have created a lot of fear for a lot of people unnecessarily. And that's why curiosity, or at least caution, to help you get curious is so important, and why fear is such a game changer and also a foreteller of untruths.
Hey there, beautiful souls. I'm Amber McCray, your therapeutic nutritionist and emotionally focused therapy coach, dedicated to guiding you on your holistic wellness journey. If you're ready to reclaim your health, nourish your body, and cultivate deeper connections within yourself and others, let's chat. Schedule a free consultation today and let's explore how holistic nutrition and emotionally focused therapy can support you on your path to wellness. Schedule that free consultation now and take the first steps towards a healthier, happier you. Find the link to my link tree in the episode description below. I love that you keep saying curious because, you know, I talk a lot about this is asking questions, getting curious. And I find that that is, for me, it was the number one thing that led me down my healing journey and spiritual journey, whatever you want to say that we're on this thing, to any sort of healing. And also, I think to, you know, emotional intelligence and self-awareness and accountability, all of that, I think really starts with that curiosity, is asking those questions. And I'm curious if you could elaborate a little bit more on the how versus the why.
Yes, absolutely. It's a sad state that many of us, when we're younger, learn to turn off the feelings. Mm-hmm. We get into a situation and it's uncomfortable, and we learn to just shut those feelings down. And these feelings, these internal feelings, I mentioned it earlier, it's called interoception. So learning how to develop our interoceptive awareness is really, really important, because it's that connection of our body talking to us, even if it's telling us the wrong thing. We can't change the narrative. We can't change the recipe unless we're listening and engaging in that communication. This is why I went with food as a way. I call it the emotion chef, because food is, for most people, I'd say the majority of people, is non-threatening. And if you learn how to just start with distinguishing flavors. So flavor is different than when you taste. Taste is a sensory system. Flavor is really a combination of multiple sensory systems. What you see is going to impact how it tastes. What you hear, even like music going on around you, can impact the smell. Like all of these things impact how you experience the flavors of food. So if you just started, you know, I have these, like a station emotion chef and a executive emotion chef. Like I have these different degrees, because you just learn having to reconnect with feelings inside of you, noticing more early when you're hungry. Because a lot of people don't even notice when they're hungry. They shut that down until it's raging. Noticing different kinds of feelings that might not be related to a quote unquote emotion. And so I talk about this too, is that emotions have two flavors. You have affective emotions, which are the ones that we're familiar with, happy, sad, angry, mad, love. And then we have homeostatic emotions, the emotions that keep us alive and healthy, like keep our body balanced. You know, you're thirsty, so you drink, and you know to drink because your body tells you, and that's an affective emotion. You eat because you're hungry, you sleep because you're tired. These are affective emotions. So if you can start to connect to the homeostatic emotions, so when you start to connect more to those homeostatic emotions, it's kind of like practice, right? It's just practice connecting to those feelings, noticing, you know, what's going on in your body. And it might sound really silly, but if you think about how many people end up seeing the doctor until it's too late, because they've waited until the brain is screaming at you, go to see someone, like, this is a problem. Warning, 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 Will Robinson. It's for the old, older people out there who know about Lost in Space. But we get that way with our emotions, right? Like we've ignored them for so long. And then all of a sudden something little happens and it's like, ah! And that's what I'm trying to keep from happening. Like noticing those little things so that you start connecting to the feelings, and then you build on it. And then you get more comfortable with noticing what was going on in your body after a particular event. Like, where did you feel it? And so you're, as you develop this association with where you're feeling the emotion in your body with the particular event. And then when you look at the event, you could say, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't have been mad. You know, maybe I really just should have been irritated at this person because what they did really wasn't that big of a deal. Or you get curious and you go to someone else who was at a particular event. It's like, what did you experience in this, you know, whatever happened? Let's just say there was a fight. Like, what did you see happen? And get those other viewpoints, or even go to back to the person and say, this is what I experienced. And they'll say, that wasn't what I was saying. This wasn't my intent. And so this develops communication and also helps us to be more active listeners. I mean, the benefits of it are just tremendous in my book.
Yeah. Wow. That was so much great information. So I kind of want to just circle back and talk about a few things. You're talking about getting in tune with your body that can correlate with somatics, right?
Right.
Where do you feel it within your body? And really, for me, that's just becoming connected with yourself. And I think especially people who have dealt with trauma, and like you said, in this society, we are, you know, kind of programmed to not feel. How can we make our feelings go away and all of these things to ignore what we're feeling inside? And I love how you said, even just starting with the simple things, you said homeostatic is starting with those. Like you said, those are our basic needs, right? And even those we're so disconnected from.
Mm-hmm.
And so really starting on that level, becoming more present, taking that time to really listen to what is happening, just becoming more aware. And I think that, you know, like you said, that's one of the first steps is what is happening to my body? How is this affecting me? So I want to make sure that I'm hearing you right. Like, how is this affecting me? We often miss that because we go to, why is this happening to me? And I just want to see if I'm getting the concept of what you're talking about. The how before the why is really getting in tune with how does this affect me? Because before we can see if our ingredients or our perception is off, we have to honor how we felt in the moment, because that is exactly how we felt. And I think that we move too fast through that and we don't catch that part. And we move to why is this happening, or what can I do to fix it? All of those things. And we don't really get the healing that we need because we miss how it has affected our body. And we're not really able to experience any of those emotions. And if we cut off the emotions that don't feel good, oftentimes we also cut off the emotions that we want to feel.
Exactly. That is it, you hit it on the head. You know, someone has a hard time feeling love. For instance, I did a YouTube video about Jonathan Majors, because Jonathan Majors is that actor who hit his girlfriend and he ended up in jail. I think he's in jail. I don't remember the total outcome of the event, but he talked in a text with his girlfriend how he's a monster and he doesn't know how to love. He doesn't know how to feel love. When you're trying to push down anger, you know, it's a system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. It's I don't it's like you can't cover your ears and expect to hear. You're
exactly.
Interrupting the input. You know, we sometimes we have to do corrective. We do corrective things because we need to hear. So we put hearing aids in, or I have glasses so I can see. So we do the opposite with this very important sensory system. We stamp it down. And so until we can just make those little tiny steps, then you can, like you said, connect. Because how can you connect outwardly unless you can't connect inwardly?
Right. That's huge.
That's why self-awareness comes with tremendous benefits. And this is, I mean, if you look at the list, anybody Google and just look, what are the benefits of self-awareness? It's a mile long. It's maybe not a mile, but you know what
Right.
I'm saying.
Yes.
It's tremendous. It's because you can, in the moment, know how you feel. the more that you improve that connection. So what can you do with it? You can pivot from it that much faster. You can go from this direction to this direction. And trust me, I've been working on this for a long time, and it's changed me tremendously. So much so that I've had people comment to me who know me, like how much it's changed me. And it's not like I get it right all the time, right? It's not perfection.
Right, exactly.
It's just developing that awareness and keeping that connection to fine tune it. And when the body's talking, I know, like, when for me, I get this feeling across my chest when I'm emotionally against something that's being said, or I'm emotionally having issues with what's going on around me. And I take a breath and I recognize that I'm feeling it. And it's like, this is my clue. This is my clue. I need to pay attention and see, like, what's going on, because I might be getting it wrong.
Right. I love that. And I love how you talked about understanding it for ourselves before we can really give it to others. Staying on that just a little bit is, for me, when we were talking about the perceptions and in a situation, I think that it's so important for that self-awareness to understand what's happening to us and be able to give ourselves grace and understanding, so that when we are connecting and having a relationship with somebody else, whether that's a coworker, a loved one, or just somebody we meet on the street, we are now able to have this viewpoint of maybe they experience the way we experience. Sometimes they get things wrong. Sometimes they may be looking at the puddle differently than us.
I'm going to say most often they're looking
right
at the puddle. I'm going to say more often than not.
Exactly. I don't think we're ever looking at the puddle the same way. And so really being able to give ourselves that first, that understanding, that grace, so that we can give that to others. I think that's so big, right? Because oftentimes we want to start with other people and we want to say, how come they aren't understanding or seeing my point of view? And then we have this world where everybody's trying to get everybody to see their point of view instead of us taking that step back and recognizing that we are all seeing different points of view, and that's okay. And our truth, or what's happening to us and how it's affecting us, matters and is okay. That duality, that both can be true, whatever they're feeling and is happening to them is also true and is okay. And same with us. And then we can come to, okay, well, what do we do about this now? We're seeing this situation from two different viewpoints. We have grace. Where do we go from here? That's a very different outlook than what we experience in society today.
Yes, it's dynamically different. And it's being able, and because I want to keep this on this food path, just because I think that it's easy for people to relate to. It's the difference between, let's just say, you know, your experience is that recipe. And so you taste it, right? Like you take this, the spoon or the fork, and you bring it to your mouth. And that's the perceptions that the body takes in. And so you could say, oh, it tastes good, like some novice chef would do. Or you could notice all of the different flavors coming from it and say, too much salt, not enough paprika, or depending on what your recipe is. So this is that examination, I think, that you and I are jointly talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
Is being able to stop and take that taste and then take another one, because you might have gotten it wrong the first time. And it's really, really important to understand how much we are driven by societal recipes, by our family recipes, by cultural recipes, religious recipes,
right,
that just might not taste good today. And it's coming to terms with, they just may not taste good anymore, or they may not serve you.
And I love that. two things is you said taste it again. I mean, we do this with our kids, right? Or ourselves, we try a new recipe and we're like, not really sure. And then we taste it again. We're like, okay, well, that one tasted a little differently. You know, that humility.
Why do you think that happened?
Because I thought that I wasn't going to like it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say one more thing that I feel like this has a lot to do with boundaries too. Is so when we taste that recipe and say we find out that we're allergic to, you know, the seasoning inside of it, we're like, we shouldn't have this anymore. But if you aren't aware and you don't taste it and you don't experience it and you're not saying, how is this making me feel? You never really understand or are able to have the information to set boundaries. How does that resonate?
No, that's 100%. It's like you were reading my whole book, because I may not have said it exactly that way, but it is about, you know, being able to eliminate from things from your emotional diet. And really, if you think about it, it's what you consume physically isn't really a whole lot different from what you consume emotionally. It can have a great outcome and it can have a really detrimental outcome. And you might, you know, not be paying attention. And you'd learn what you like and you don't like when you really taste something rather than just shoveling it and not experiencing the flavors. So yes, you are 1,000%, 1,000% right. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it.
Awesome.
It's like I'm gonna have you do all my podcasts.
No, I love this. And you're speaking my language. So I'm all juiced over here. And I also think that it's interesting if we're talking about recipes and we're talking about how it affects our body. I am being aware that even just talking about the recipes and talking about the connection, this might sound weird, but just bear with me.
All right.
I'm starting to salivate, which is the first sign of like the digestive, right? Like your body is starting to work and it's in this rest and digest and you can receive and all of that. And so I feel like my body is saying, I love what I'm hearing. I'm accepting it. I'm receiving it. I'm digesting it. Does that make sense?
Sure. I mean, I can't say definitively that that's the reason, but I like it. I like it.
Going with that.
I'm going to go with that. Yes.
It's not because I want lunch. It's because this conversation.
But I mean, if you think about it, you can see something and it makes you hungry. So why not have an appetite for good conversation?
See, I love that. Yes. So Kim, all of this, what do you feel like is the most important flavor of emotion that you hope our listeners take away from this conversation? And how does that enhance their journey towards self-connection?
Can I have two?
Of course.
Thank you. Because I want to do the polar opposites.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to start out with the one that is fear. Because fear, and when I say this, I want to encourage people to understand their recipes for fear or their recipes for the other word. But fear is what holds us back. And so when I talk about understanding the recipe, it's literally what has to happen for you to experience fear. I have a whole exercise that people can go through. I would do one-on-one coaching sessions for people if they want to uncover it and have my guidance, or if they do group things where you can learn to understand. I'm still kind of playing with how I want to go through group things with it. And I also want to create an app for this process.
Yes.
Of discovering your,
amazing,
your recipes, because it's so critical. Because when I do this with people, you just don't know. Like, it's like in your subconscious, it's the things that get launched that you don't know are brewing. So understanding what it is that you need, that has to happen for you to experience fear so that you can try and move beyond it. It's one of the things that keeps us back. It's controlling. I mean, think about how fear is used to control. Why do you think the news is the way it is? I mean, what do religions use to control people? Fear, fear of dying, fear of punishment. I mean, it's fear is a powerful motivator, but it's a negative motivator. Unless it's true danger is in front of you, true, real danger. And then on the opposite end is love. So love, we can't live without love. Love is the core essence of being human. It brings you so much joy and connection. And yet so many people's recipes really hinder them. And I'm going to say that this is true of me. What I needed to feel love at one point in my life, it wasn't healthy because it wasn't about benefiting me. It was very much about another person. So just like fear can be beneficial and also have its detriment, love is the same way. Yeah. When you love in an unhealthy way, or you don't understand really what needs to happen for you to feel love, that isn't good so that you can build up, because it's intention, right? It's about recognizing it. I didn't see a bunch of Teslas out on the road until I drove a Tesla and I was like, I love this car. And then they were everywhere.
Right.
So it's the focus, and it's helping get your brain to focus on what you need. So love and what you need to feel love is super critical. And I feel these two, if you did nothing else in your life and just focused on those two, I think your life would change tremendously. And you'd be bringing in more of what you really want and less of what you don't want.
I love that. We talk a lot about love and fear here. So I very much agree with you. Yes. Yes.
They're so important.
They are. They are. Kim, thank you so much. Where can people find you? All this information, you guys, will be in the description, but I just want to give you the platform to tell people where to find you.
KimCorti.com. is where I'm at. I'm really working on my YouTube channel. I will admit, you know, I'm a little not loving social media. I think you and I have yes, this conversation. Yeah. And so I do post a little bit on Instagram, and I'll probably be driving more traffic on Instagram towards YouTube. But I feel like YouTube is where I can spend more quality time, a little bit of a length of time, and do videos. And as I evolve in down this process, I will share more, but I think that those two places are probably the best. And both are at the Kim Corti. The Kim Corti.
The Kim Corti. Yes, I love it.
The Kim Corti. Many out there. Yeah. I'm the one.
The only emotional chef that we know.
Yes. Yes. I believe I have coined that term.
I love it. I love it. Kim, it has been such a pleasure and a blast. You are amazing. You're just a sweet soul and just extremely intelligent. Thank you for coming on here and sharing all of your experiences and your book and just all of this information with us. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. If I could talk to you every day, I would. You're just such a joy. I mean, I feel like this is a great connection. And I just really, really, really appreciated this time and the platform and the ability to reach out to your listeners. I appreciate your listeners.
Thank you. Thank you. The views and opinions expressed by myself and any guest on this podcast are solely ours and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of any organizations we are affiliated with. The content provided is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as medical advice. As always, consult with a trusted healthcare professional regarding any medical conditions or concerns.